You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
You're listening to Muses and Stuff, the podcast that celebrates those who live, love, and breathe rock and roll.
From the incredible groupies, girlfriends, and wives who went after what and who they wanted,
to the journalists, photographers, and other behind-the-scenes characters who play such an important part in rock and roll history.
We are your hosts, Shanti and Lynx.
Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to do another episode, another like unusual, fun one. I'm interested to see where this one goes.
So this is going to be kind of an experimental episode in the sense that I don't have as many notes.
Yep.
It's going to be a little bit different. It's from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll just see where we go with it. And I thought because it's a bit of an experimental episode that in case people are joining us for the first time ever, because that happens, where all of a sudden this is the episode that people are going to start listening. This is number one because maybe they found a specific hashtag that they've been looking for because they really like this person that we're doing. So let me introduce myself. My name is Shanti.
Yeah, I'm Lynx.
And this is our podcast, which is called Muses and Stuff. So we talk about muses and also stuff.
Yeah.
Mostly music related.
Absolutely.
And so we tell the stories of like our backstage movers and shakers.
Mm-hmm.
Our girlfriends, our wives.
And sometimes even mothers.
Mothers?
Yeah.
So, yes. Mothers, muses, groupies, sisters. And in this episode today, we're going to be talking about Pete Doherty. Or I know that I think if you're from London or from England, it's pronounced Doherty. Pete Doherty. So Pete Doherty. And it's based on a book called Pete Doherty, My Prodigal Son, Every Mother's Nightmare, A Child Off the Rails, by his mother, Jacqueline Doherty.
I'm so curious what his thoughts are on this book. Like, was he okay with it being written?
Okay, so definitely I'll be able to address this question. Let me just say that we are recording this episode in advance because when it airs, it's going to be the 20th of June. And where will you be?
I'll be in England.
So what do you think you're doing on the 20th of June in England?
Oh, my goodness. I think that's like our first day where we're just free to do whatever we want.
So you last night you saw the Rolling Stones, and the night before that you saw Pearl Jam.
Yeah, and now we're just like roaming the city and doing maybe some museums. I definitely want to see the Tate, the British Museum. I got some like rock and roll related things that hopefully we'll be able to do, and I'll post about those. So yeah, if you don't know, we have a Muses and Stuff Instagram account.
Check the stories, because I'm sure they're going to be amazing. Oh, yeah. And just the feed itself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is going to be good.
I'm so excited for you. So what did Pete think about this book? Hard to say. Mm-hmm. Probably just that I think anything associated with his mother at this time, and probably in general, had to do with a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Every time he was interviewed around this time, and around this time I'm talking, this book came out in 2007. Okay. It's already 11 years old. And a lot has changed with him since then. I mean, a lot and not. Okay. I've created a timeline that we can kind of talk about.
Okay.
And I know between the years like 2002 and 2007, anytime his mom was mentioned in an interview, he would, or his family, he would become upset.
Oh, okay.
So I think that this episode is going to be interesting because, again, it's from a mother. We've only ever done one other mother before, and mm-hmm. that was Agnes DeMarco, Mac DeMarco's mom,
who is very different.
She continues to, I mean, yeah, very different in the sense, like, they're both very loving mothers, but Agnes is just so bright and cheery, and she's so accessible.
She's the best.
We still get to be in contact with her, like, regularly. She's amazing, and I can't wait to actually like, visit her and meet her in person. Absolutely. Someday. Jacqueline wrote this book kind of when everything was still going on with him.
Yeah.
Right? Like at the height of his drug addiction. Because, well, I guess the addiction was really lasting 2002, maybe even a little bit before that, past 2007 when this book was written. Yeah. So there was no real happy ending at the end of this book. Yeah. There was no
like, way to wrap it up,
not
type of
really
thing. Yeah.
And so I kind of was like, okay, so what's been going on with him? Because, and the reason why I even care, like the reason why I give a shit, is because I was kind of obsessed with him mm-hmm. in 2009, because he's that kind of celebrity. He's that kind of artist. He's that kind of musician that people and young girls, and even the mother, like Jacqueline mentioned, not just young girls, but like grown men.
Oh, yeah.
Young boys, like everybody.
You're drawn to that.
Was drawn to him. So I first heard of Pete in the Libertines and Baby Shambles was in 2008, probably. So by the time Baby Shambles was already a thing and he wasn't even really in the Libertines anymore. And then it was in 2009 that he started releasing his solo stuff. And I thought that he was super hot, obviously. Mm-hmm. I was having this whole music renaissance in my own life, really like discovering music and being like, holy shit, and going to shows. This is when I was living in Peterborough. And then I met a guy who kind of reminded me of Pete. Because I was listening to, you know, the Libertines and Baby Shambles. And then this band came to town, and my friend Drew was putting on shows at the time, and he was like, Shanti and Corey, you have to let this band stay at your house this night. I have to work. Matt has to work out of town. So you have to go to the show, you have to dance, and then you have to let them crash at your house.
Yeah.
And we were like, we already have plans. We're already going to see another show that night. And he's like, just go and like help me out. And you're going to love them anyways. So it was back in MySpace time.
Oh, yeah.
That I looked on MySpace and the lead singer of the band was like 6'3", just like Pete.
Ooh.
Had the exact same body type.
Yeah.
Almost the same kind of haircut And it was like one of those Wayne's World moments where I was like, he will be mine.
Oh, I thought you were going to say swing.
Also, swing. Is that Wayne's World?
Yeah.
She will be mine.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
She will be mine.
Definitely.
She will be mine. Oh, yes. She will be mine.
Amazing.
And so the two became sort of synonymous with one another, and neither of those situations were very healthy, but it was a fucking fantasy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I've been there. Oh, yeah.
Well, you've been there.
Oh, yeah.
So what I didn't know was the word prodigal.
As really? In,
like, my prodigal son. Yeah. I thought it was a compliment.
Aww.
So somebody who is recklessly wasteful or extravagant. Mm-hmm. So somebody who's left the family home to lead their life in a reckless way. What a waster. What a fucking waster. You pissed it all off the wall. Around the corner where they chased her. There's tears coming out from everywhere. Yep. So you might wonder why she wrote the book. Why was it released in 2007? And you associate with people around him at that time as being like just wanting to get something out of him because of his fame.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't like that at all.
Okay.
She's a very sweet woman.
All right.
And very loving and like kind woman who just kind of wanted to set the record straight.
Okay.
So very much like a lot of our other episodes when a lot of the times it's just like correcting things that have been.
Getting your voice out
there.
Yeah.
She definitely got to have her voice out. So why she wrote it, she, you know, one of the things she said was, it's balm to a hurting heart. Like B-A-L-M, like balm. It's balm to a hurting heart. I hope this book does the same for aching hearts everywhere. Mm. So she really wanted to raise addiction issues in society.
Aww.
She was a nurse.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. So she just wanted to clear up some things. Like when Pete would talk to the press, he would have a tendency to lie about a lot of stuff. And one of the things that he lied about a lot was his upbringing. Mm. So he would say things like, you know, we traveled a lot because it was a military family, which it was. But then he'd say things like, but I lived with my father and the social workers. And like that is the farthest thing from the truth.
I see.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely, like, the first time that I ever heard of him was the Baby Shambles song, Fuck Forever.
Oh.
Because I'm so clever.
So I'm pretty sure his drug problems started happening in 2002.
Yeah.
And I remember in 2009 watching this thing on YouTube called 24 Hours with Pete Doherty. Have you seen that?
No.
It's insane.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. It is by MTV.
Okay.
It's in like five parts, and they're trying, the end is to try to get him to this like catwalk show that they've put on.
Okay.
And it's him showing a little TV crew around his like little English manor mansion-y type of house. I thought it was hilarious at the time.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Okay.
And you could tell that he's like messed up, but it was funny.
Yeah.
But as his mom will go on to say, he used to be a very funny child, and he became funny as he got older, but not in the funny ha-ha way.
I got you.
In the, like, oh, my God.
Yeah, this guy, I can't believe this.
Like, that is too funny.
Yes.
His mom started to become concerned about him when at Christmas he was wearing a vest and jeans because he usually loved wearing a cravat, waistcoat, and trousers and a crisp white shirt with an Oscar Wilde air about him.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my Oscar Wilde shirt.
Yeah. So they're very much like that's the vibe that he wanted to get of off. And then he just like she could just tell something was off with him. He was always really close with his family. So like I said about his mother, she served in the army as a nurse and she was from Liverpool.
Another one.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So the family was close. She said like she talked about everything with her kids. She made sure to never have a dishwasher in the house because that's when they would get the closest is when they would do the dishes together, even into the adolescence. That's when they would have like their big talks. And so the book was a lot sadder than I expected. I didn't expect so much grief.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, yeah.
Heavy.
It was. Heavy. It was. Between 2002 and 2007, when the book was written, he had been in 6 rehabs.
Wow.
And none of them had really, like, worked out.
Yeah.
In 2003, Pete had a son named Estelle with a woman named Lisa Moorish, who was from the band Kill City.
Oh, yeah.
But he was, like, off the rails at this point. So his mom was living in Holland because they were always stationed to different places for the army. But she would like travel as often as possible back to London to try and like help him out and get a hold of everything. As his fame was growing, like it became even more and more difficult because all of a sudden people were he was surrounded by people constantly. So this book is very much like it kind of brought me down a couple of notches because I remember being like in my late teens and idolizing this guy. He actually won Hero of the Year award in an Enemy thing at around this time when really like you find out that this family is suffering. Her marriage is suffering like and they are a strong family. She says that when she visited him there seemed to be hundreds of friends around and she didn't want to make like a big deal out of it because she didn't want to push herself out of his life.
Of course.
She'd go to a lot of his gigs.
She really supported him.
His sisters would go to the gigs as well. But she said this: watching my sick child become the focus of adulation from fans provokes, therefore, a range of feelings. On one hand, I wanted to say, please leave him alone, because I don't want this adulation to cause him any more harm. It can't be good to anyone in the grip of addiction, with a court case over his head, to be getting the message, we love you, therefore your behavior is okay. And on the other hand, I suppose I'm always hoping that he may meet with a fan that has come through the same ordeals as him, and so could provide a solution. So she wrote about how when she saw people talking to him after the show, everyone hanging on to his next word, like he seemed so lost and lonely. So the book is full of a lot of confusion because she doesn't get why he got there. Because there was no big trauma. There was no neglect. There was like he never wanted without or is like that the saying? Yeah. Do you know?
You always try to find that, like, moment in your life, but sometimes there's not, like, some specific thing that triggers, you know, what happens next.
Yeah. So we'll go back a little bit, and we do get a glimpse of him as a child. Okay. She's not surprised that he did become famous and that so many people end up loving him and loved him and still do love him. Because he was kind of the same way as a child. He had a range of friends. He was very popular. He loved his grandparents.
Have been so adorable as a kid.
Well, yeah, like look at him. And the pictures in this book are adorable. He is adorable. And he had that baby face as he got, look through it. He had that baby face as he grew older too. So he was very close with his grandparents.
The baby pictures are so cute.
Nanny Liverpool and Nanny London.
Yeah.
And his mom really like curtailed her own career to be home with the kids and really believed that being home with them was like particularly important. She says, we didn't have any spare money, but we had a lot of love and time.
Yeah.
It's like, I totally get that. We were the same way.
For sure.
She writes that there's an old Jesuit saying, give me the child at 7 and I'll show you the man. Which, like, I get that. I think about who I was at 7 or who my brothers were at 7. And they very much have those characteristics of who they are today. But in his case, he was very, very far removed. She says, at 7, Peter was a happy soul, a joy to have in the family, articulate, funny, knew the difference between right and wrong, a mother's dream, an avid reader, was at liberty. Ooh. At 24, and so at like the time that she's writing it, Pete's in his early to mid 20s, maybe.
Wow.
He was young.
Oh, yeah.
When he got fame, and then when his addiction was in like full blown, full. At 24, Peter was a troubled soul, a cause for great concern for the family, inarticulate and fragile, funny but not ha-ha type of funny. The line between right and wrong had become blurred, a mother's nightmare, yet remained an avid reader, was imprisoned. So again, like that whole thing about like ha-ha funny, there's a part where in the 24 hours with Pete Doherty, that the reporter, the MTV person is like, we heard that there's cat's paws up on, like there's marks of cat's paws up on the wall. And he's like, oh yeah, like I'll show you the cat's paws. And then he brings her into the room and then there's just like these paw prints and there's cats everywhere.
Okay.
There's cats everywhere when they're like looking around this sty, this actual like pig pen of a mansion.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's like, they're like, how did the paws get up the ceiling? And he's like, oh, you know, the cat just goes up the wall. And he's like, okay. He's like, actually, I might have done that just like that. How did those cat's paws get up the wall?
Oh my goodness. All right.
Yeah. And there's another clip of they walk into a room. And they're like, what's this room? And he's like, well, the cats have taken over it.
Oh, God.
Which explains the flies.
Have you ever seen Grey Gardens?
Yeah.
It's this documentary. It's an amazing documentary, but it's like this mother and daughter who are related to the Kennedys. And they're amazing, but their place, which once was this beautiful mansion, is now just taken over by cats and raccoons and everything you can possibly think of. And like they don't clean up after, like they run the household. I'm imagining that right now.
But I remember watching that and being like, that's so romantic.
It's interesting, like what, especially when you're younger, like what you think, just like with, you know, addiction and stuff, it is, especially in the rock and roll world, sort of romanticized, for yeah. sure.
Okay, so wild that you mentioned that. Because speaking of that, I noticed that earlier you were looking at this book. It's yeah. a total coincidence that I have this book sitting out, which is called Rock Bottom, Dark Moments in Music Babylon,
Miss
by
B.
none other, Pamela DeBar. So Pamela, actually, I think this is one of her lesser known books.
Yes, for sure.
She wrote this whole book on all of these
dark moments
in music history, which mm-hmm. usually cause like the death. So like she has a chapter on John Bonham. She has a chapter on Mark Bolan.
Yeah.
Jimmy, Janis. Yeah. Like they're Sid all Vicious, here. Kurt Cobain. Like,
it's a great book. Pamela, if you can find it.
Like Graham Parsons, like yeah. Fallen Angel.
Morrison.
She's always so ahead of all of this. But essentially, Pete's mom looked through a lot of this kind of stuff as well. She tried to read the most like autobiographies and biographies as she could. She tried to like understand.
Yeah.
And she like still couldn't understand because he was a wonderful and happy and bright child. Mm-hmm. As a teenager, he never missed school. He was in really good health. He always had the lead parts in school plays. They would go on vacations together. They explored. They went out to dinner once a week. Like the kids could always choose the restaurant.
It's kind of sad that she's like looking back and being like, what, maybe like, what did I do or what?
She, yeah.
Like, totally. How did this happen? Like, I thought I did my son right and all this, but it's not
yeah. about that. She never thought that she'd have a child of hers that would do anything illegal.
Yeah.
You know, like she talks about the time that he went to prison after stealing from Carl Barrett. It was broadcasted all over the news and like the shame that it brought the family. She says, it's difficult to articulate how much we suffered as a family at that time. My head was full of emotions ranging from anger and wanting to give him a piece of my mind to complete compassion and wishing to hold him and reassure him that everything would be all right. It's like, I get that, you know, like, I have brothers, and you know, when one of them gets in trouble or whatever, you feel for them. You're mad at them, but you feel for them, and you're like, but he's a good boy.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Reporters would be calling his grandparents, pretending to be like friends or part of his recovery team to try to find out where he was.
That is so heartbreaking. Like, that's so evil. How could I never be like a paparazzi or a reporter or something like that.
No, and Jacqueline like wrote letters to some of the reporters, or like would talk to some of them on the phone, and like some of them like apologized, or like even one young girl was like started crying. She's like, I'm sorry, this is what they wanted me to do. Like, because so many things were written about them, you know. The sisters couldn't get away from that Doherty name. Can I see the book for a second? Actually, I have bookmarked.
It's a really cute picture of him at 16 in there.
That's exactly what... Oh, that's so funny, because that's exactly what I thought too.
Yeah, I definitely had a thing for Pete back in the day as well.
He's just beautiful.
He is.
Just a... And a poet.
Yeah, exactly.
I have the whole book of his poetry.
You lent it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Big Brown Book.
Yeah, yeah. It's great.
Weirdly enough, to bring it back, remember the guy I was telling you about that kind of looked like him, mm-hmm. and was kind of like punky and tall and beautiful? Like, when he left my house once, I had found a letter later that he'd written to me, and he'd put it in that book. Like, hello. Wow.
He read your mind.
Yeah. So this is the letter. Greetings from Dorset. It is with a saddened and anguished heart that I write this letter. I have nothing against you personally. You are probably a rather nice young lady. I am just another mother who has had the most awful 18 months, and I ask you to think how you would feel if your mother had been exposed like that. In truth, your article was not unkind, just very untrue. I was severely misquoted, and the quotes taken out of context. It has caused considerable distress to me and to members of my family. I am a small, private person, and am trying to maintain my dignity throughout what's going on around me. I have, to my knowledge, never done anyone any harm, only aspired to serve my fellow man and to treat people as I'd like to be treated. I have worked hard all my life, and I do not deserve to be lied about or misquoted. We cannot fight you in a courtroom, and we desperately try to protect our anonymity. But I appeal to you as a human being. Please consider what you, as a hungry journalist, are able to inflict on others by the touch of your typewriter. So she actually never sent that letter, but... those were things that she wanted people to hear. And then, you know, by writing this book, she did get that little bit out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she says that the way that she used to cope through everything was through crying. She says that, but if anybody suffered the most, it was Pete's father.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
She says, I've learned that although I can't hide my secret shame, it's there for all the world to see and ridicule me on, and although I have suffered indignities that cannot be imagined, I feel that, in my pain, I have been able to help other people in a way that I never thought possible. As a result of the whole world knowing my son as Britain's worst drug addict, I cannot hide. Seriously, he had that reputation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just like Amy Winehouse, you know, everyone knew. It wasn't like, it wasn't something hidden away or anything. It was like regular on the news.
Yeah. And like, I'm not surprised that he became famous because of his talent, mm-hmm. you know, meeting Carl. But also she says like, and my brother was the same way. Some people cameras just flock to.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Some people are just lucky.
Yeah.
Like your friend. And some people like, the cameras will just always go for them first. Yeah. And so he was one of those people. He would always be in front of the cameras. Once when he was 16 and staying with a school friend at his family's Mediterranean home, she called to ask him like how he was doing, what was going on. And he said he had just had dinner with the president of the country he was visiting.
Wow.
Just by chance.
Wow.
I think you'll get a kick out of this. He was a big fan of the Queen's Park Rangers Football Club and made his own fanzine. So his own fanzine, and it did well, actually. People were sending him letters from all across the country, and then enough, he was invited to the director's box where the team was based.
He was a zine maker.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. I love that.
After his A-levels in 1997, it was time for him to leave home, and he went to London, where he met Carl Barrett, who was friends with his older sister, Amy Jo.
Oh.
Don't look back into the sun. Now you know that the time has come. And they said it would never come for you. Oh, my friends, you haven't changed. You look here up and living strange, and I know.
So, having said all that about his childhood, his mom says that he would lie to reporters and about his childhood, and this would really hurt her. She's read all kinds of books about addiction, like I said, on Jimi Hendrix, on Janis, and says, "It is irrelevant to me that other musicians have trodden this path before because everybody's story is different. This makes no difference to a mother's heart. It certainly doesn't ease the pain."
Hmm.
Yeah. His sisters were having a hard time because every time they wanted to visit their brother, they'd have to share him with so many people.
Yeah. Yeah, many hangers-on.
Yeah, and speaking of hangers-on, Jacqueline tells a story where a 17-year-old girl was attempting to meet Peter.
Oh, no.
And ended up, I don't know, they ended up coming into contact.
Oh, no.
Because probably if people tried to track down the mother first, right? Like to get to...
Yeah, where are they?
Mm-hmm. And so Jacqueline ended up chatting with her and told her that Peter was really sick and that she shouldn't lavish her attention on someone who was really ill.
That's like... Like... stalker level almost.
Yeah, and he had a lot of those.
Yeah.
A lot of those. So she finishes with, "Mine is a mother's tale. If you were looking for sleaze and shocking stories, then this has not been the book for you, and I'm sorry if it has left you feeling cheated. But I am hoping that you may just have been able, through my simple story, to understand a little of what goes on behind the headlines that you read. Peter may never become a penitent prodigal. He may never turn from his present lifestyle and may never have true peace in his heart. He may never know the forgiveness of God, but whilst I have breath in my body, I shall continue to pray for him, whether he wants me to or not. Until then, he'll remain Peter the drug addict, Peter the prisoner, Peter the errant father, Peter the poet, Peter the prolific writer, Peter the singer, Peter, my prodigal son."
Aww. It must be so tough, too. Like, you raise a kid, you do everything you can, and then at some point, like, you do have to let go, and, like, no matter what they do in life, like, that's not your life anymore. That's not your... You can be there for them. You can, you know, make sure that they know you're reliable and everything, but they're going to make the choices that they make. And
yeah. And that's what she had said. Like, you know, being a nurse, she knows that no matter what she does.
Yeah.
It's not her that makes the choice, and it's not her. But the wild thing is about this is that it's 2018 and Pete's still alive.
Yeah.
So we'll go through my timeline.
Yes.
Because...
And that's something, like, you never would have thought back in the day.
No. She had, like, drawn up documents for him to sign. Wow. And he was like, "Mom, you think I'm going to die, don't you?" And she was like, "Yeah."
Yeah, look what your situation is right now.
But he's not
possible.
Dead.
Yeah.
Do you know what he's up to these days?
No.
Okay. So I'll tell you.
Please.
I mean, it's not the happiest story, but we'll start kind of, again, a little bit from the beginning, mm-hmm. and then I'll tell you what he's up to and probably add a few things in there that you didn't know that I didn't even know.
Awesome.
So the Libertines were formed in 1997, but hit it big in 2002 with Up the Bracket.
Yeah.
So he's asked to leave the band in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Shambles formed in 2005, and then they had two albums down in, how do you pronounce it, Albion?
Sounds good.
And then Shatter's Nation, which I listened to those two albums a lot. In 2009, he released Grace Wastelands, which was just him. And I loved that album, actually.
It's good.
So it was interesting because I listened to that in real time when it came out.
Oh. "But you did look dapper in your mother's old green scarf with famous auntie Arthur's trousers on. You're
slapped by that slapper. Now we all laugh. She laughed the loudest song in 93. Jammed the bee's knees off the beat. Cheeky and say, we all fell around.
In 2007-2008, Roberto Cavalli had his photo shoot, and there's some of the most beautiful photos of him, and it was compared, he was compared to Marlon Brando.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, it was reported that Pete would be taking the lead role opposite Charlotte Gainsbourg.
I love her.
In Alfred de Musset's autobiographical novel, La Confession d'un Enfant du Siècle, mm-hmm. which translates in... to Child of the Century, Confessions of a Child of the Century.
Yeah.
So I love that book. And I've never seen them film, though.
No, me neither.
It was screened at the 2012 Cannes Film Festival. Charlotte Gainsbourg, she deserves an episode.
100%. And we haven't even done Jane yet.
Oh, my God.
There's so many left. It's like, this is never ending. Mm. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get on those for sure.
So... one thing that we didn't talk about in this episode, because it wasn't really about her.
Kate.
Yeah. So he met Kate Moss at in 2005 at her 31st birthday party. And they had an on and off relationship for several years. And so she also sang on some of his tracks. Like, do you remember that song, La Belle et la Bête?
Yeah.
You
seem not beautiful. Wow.
Yeah. And so she'd sing on some of his, she'd go to some of his shows and sing on stage. Like, there's a weird YouTube video of the two of them. It looks like a home movie. And he just, like, comes in with a guitar. And then she comes in this, like, beautiful white dress and sits on this, like, swing. And they're, like, sort of singing at each other. And it, like, is all romantic. But obviously they're, well, I mean, not obviously, but, like, they're probably both kind of fucked up.
Yeah. They're both partiers at that point. Kate Moss is, like, the ultimate party queen.
Yeah.
Of that
she
era.
Liked those rock stars.
Yeah, oh, yeah, she did.
Who doesn't? Yeah, so they were engaged to be married, which obviously they didn't. And it was in the 2008 that he won that Hero of the Year award. Oh, so goodness. Like right when all this shit's happening, and it's like,
really?
Seriously? So in 2007, he was briefly engaged to a fashion model named Irina Lazzaranio.
Okay.
And we know that he has a son named Astiel, who's actually 15 now.
Time is such a crazy thing.
But he also has a daughter.
No way.
Who was born in 2011 to a South African model named Lindy Hingston.
Wow.
So the latest thing that he's released in terms of an album was the 2016 Hamburg demonstrations.
Okay, I haven't heard it.
And if you Google Pete Doherty 2018, one of the first articles that pops up is him being assisted walking from his car to the hotel.
Oh, no.
His hair is completely gray.
What?
He is bloated.
No.
He's got a big belly. He's wearing track pants that are almost falling down, and they're like, he was jet lagged.
So sounds more like alcohol.
Right?
Yeah.
So... he's got this album. He's touring this summer.
Wow.
He has been touring, and I've been kind of watching, but he doesn't leave the UK, and sometimes he goes to France, and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because of his, like, past.
Maybe it's difficult for him
like,
to get.
Hard to get a visa, hard to get a working permit anywhere. But I've seen, like, a couple of interviews that he did online recently. And, like, while I'm very happy that he's not dead, I can only imagine what kind of artist he would be, what kind of poet he would be, what kind of beautiful human, like, inside and out he would be.
If he took care of himself.
If he would have been able to take care of himself. But, you know, like, I don't want to blame him.
No.
We don't want to, like, this is a story about addiction and raising awareness.
It's hard.
Which is, I guess, what this episode is maybe.
Yeah.
talking about. But it completely took a lot away from him. You know, it's obviously like the photos that, like, did you even know he had a daughter? Like, no. Is there a lot of stuff about him and his daughter online? No. The one article that you do see is like, she had a christening, he wasn't there. Mm. And so it's just like, it's really sad. And I tried to see if I could get a hold of Jacqueline in any way, but like, she's not online. She's not.
Yeah.
She's not on Facebook, and so it's just kind of sad, man. There's like, there's no real tie-up or wrap-up to this, except it's just wild that
he's still here.
That he's still here, that I remember totally glamorizing him.
Yeah.
Totally, he was a total fantasy. Mm-hmm. And now, just like it's happened before, where we've just like, the bubble has burst, where you see things for what they really are, and you're shit.
An ex-boyfriend of mine, who's the sweetest guy ever, definitely sort of glamorized the whole rock and roll. He was a musician. I think a lot of people, because, you know, your idols went through that phase, you think maybe I have to go through that phase too to be like a real artist or something. Or unfortunately, he passed away.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just a couple years ago. And it's just such a loss. Like, you don't need to go down that way to be an artist. You know, you don't. That's not what gives these amazing musicians, these amazing artists, their talent. The talent's mm-hmm. already there, you know. And in the end, most of the time, these drugs do the opposite. They take away what's good. They're not adding to it, you know. The mm-hmm. longer, especially the longer you take them and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're just trying to chase, you know, what you once had.
Yeah.
But it's tough. I mean, with addiction especially, you know. And with how many times he was in rehab and everything.
He's probably been since, right? I mean, that book was in 2007. And
with that, it's like, you have to really want to change. You can't just go in because people are, you know, forcing you to, or, you know, you feel pressure or whatever. Like, that's a real decision that a person has to make. And even when you have made that decision, that doesn't mean there's like not slip ups and everything, you know. That's part of it too. It's there's no one road either, you know. Every addict has a different road and a different road to recovery if they're lucky and they make it to that point.
So I think he is maybe almost 40.
Yeah,
he looks older than that. Yeah. But having said that, like, I would still love to see him live, you know, if I happen to be in the right place at the right time. And I just, like, sincerely, like, hope for the best for him. And I hope that there's a relationship between him and his mom. And I know that him and his dad weren't talking for a long time because his dad just couldn't, like, handle that pain anymore. Yeah. But, addiction is a serious thing. So sex, drugs, and rock and roll, that was a drugs episode for you. And guess what? It didn't end up super happy.
No.
So,
and yeah, if anyone else is, like, going through similar things, you know, there are ways out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be the you know, the end result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Do you have a favorite, like, Libertine song or Baby Shambles?
My goodness. I don't know. I did get to see the Libertines live, though.
Oh, cool.
They were fun.
Where?
It was here. I think it was, like, the Opera House or something. It was, like, a smaller venue.
Oh.
It was either the Phoenix or the Opera House.
Wow.
Yeah.
Must have been amazing.
Yeah.
I really like the Baby Shambles song, What Katie Did.
Yeah. And that's Moss, right?
Yeah.
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 That one's a good one.
Yeah. Well, all right. All right. I mean, sorry, guys. Sometimes they end on bummers. Sometimes we have bummer episodes. But we'll make sure that the one after that is maybe more lighthearted. Yeah.
And we got some interviews coming up that won't be bummers.
So. Oh, you got some interviews coming up that are not going to be bummers. And also, you know, that was a bit of an experimental episode where we just had a bit more of a little conversation. Because the book wasn't very long. And,
so let us know your thoughts on this. Do you like episodes like this? Like, do you want more?
Yeah. And also, do you have any any groupie stories?
Yeah.
Are you a groupie? Are you a former groupie? Are you a retired groupie?
Yeah.
Do you have any funny stories? Have you ever been on tour? Funny things happen on tour. You can tell us.
If you want to be anonymous, you can be anonymous. Yeah.
And if you want us to read the... read it on an episode, let us know. Just email us at musesandstuff@gmail.com.
Yeah. We're on Instagram.
Instagram. We know that you guys have some great stories. And if you want to share them, you can tell us your name. And if you want to be anonymous,
we'll make you anonymous.
That would be really fun to get some like real life, like modern groupie stories.
Yeah, maybe we'll throw in a couple of our own.
Okay. All right. Well, can't wait to hear all about your England adventure links. And again, check the Instagram and Facebook.
I'll keep my eye out for Pete.
Keep an eye out. You just never know, especially with that lucky girl that you've got with you.
Yeah, Lisa.
Lisa, lucky Lisa. You never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. We'll get this.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
What you gonna do, Katie? You're a sweet, sweet girl. But it's a cruel, cruel world. Cruel, cruel world. But things are none too strong, Katie. Hurry up, Mrs. Brown. I can feel it coming down, and it won't take none too long. But since you said goodbye, the polka dots fill my eyes, and I don't know why.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.